should the government be involved in telling us what to eat? Given the track record that they have so far, you could really make a pretty plausible argument that they've done more harm than good.
Milk is about the most perfect food there is. A glass full at every meal is good for you.
Once upon a time, meat, butter, eggs, and cheese were considered the foundation of a healthy diet.
Meat and eggs help the body grow and make it strong. Meat is good for you.
Then in the 1950s, a Minnesota doctor named Ansel Keys put forth his diet heart hypothesis, claiming that saturated fats raise cholesterol levels and cause heart attacks. He produced landmark studies backing up his findings, which transformed nutrition science, and Keys became a powerful figure in the science community. Contemporaries who publicly questioned the validity of his findings risked losing their research funding. When the U.S. adopted dietary guidelines in 1980, Keys's recommendations became enshrined in national food policy. Ever since, Americans have been getting fatter and more unhealthy, and despite major advances in treatment, heart disease is still the leading cause of death for both men and women. Today, the science behind Keys's dietary findings is once again being challenged. Nina Teicholz is an investigative journalist and author of the New York Times bestseller, The Big Fat Surprise. Her book tells the story of how Keys's research became conventional wisdom in the first place.
It did start in the 1950s when America was in a panic over the rising tide of heart disease, and there were a number of ideas about what caused heart disease, and into that sort of vacuum of explanation came Ansel Keys, a pathologist at the University of Minnesota. Many people know his story now. And it was the diet heart hypothesis that said it was not only saturated fat, but dietary cholesterol, right? Egg mm-hmm. yolks, shellfish.
All the good stuff.
All the good stuff.
Cheese, meat.
That caused heart disease. And so how did that become enshrined in our institutions? It started with Ansel Keys getting himself onto the nutrition panel at the American Heart Association in 1961. The American Heart Association is the first institution anywhere in the world to say, don't eat saturated fats and dietary cholesterol to avoid a heart attack. That was like the tiny little germ that grew up into all, you know, all the recommendations that we have today. It went from the American Heart Association. It was also at that time adopted by the National Institutes of Health. And then it evolved over to capture really the U.S. government completely in 1980 with the launch of our U.S. Dietary Guidelines, which was really just a wholesale adoption of what the American Heart Association had been saying. And by 1980, it wasn't just saturated fat. It had evolved to be all fat, right? So mm-hmm. it was the low-fat diet as we know it. You know, keep saturated fat low, keep all fat low, and don't eat cholesterol.
Personally, I feel for me, it's almost somewhat confusing because one day, you know, we see a study that says, you know, meat and eggs are bad for you. The next day, it's, well, eggs are okay. You can have it. We were wrong. I mean, why is the science all over the place with this?
There's like small flip-flopping headlines like, caffeine's mm-hmm. good, caffeine's bad, Oat Bran good, Oat Bran's bad. I'm dating myself with the Oat Bran there. But the bigger themes are really dietary cholesterol was one of the major culprits from that 1961 date on, and then was finally dropped in 2013 by the American Heart Association, 2015 by our gut dietary guidelines. So that was like, that's one big part of Ansel Keys's hypothesis that fell. Mm-hmm. And the other part of his hypothesis, which is saturated fat, that is wobbling now, right? Mm-hmm. But the explanation about why we have these flip-flopping headlines is mainly that it's this, we have made our policy based upon this weak kind of science called epidemiology, which shows association but not causation. And so we've taken this kind of weak science and made it the basis of our policy. And then when there's a more rigorous kind of science that comes along called randomized controlled clinical trials and kind of disproves that or cannot confirm that hypothesis, well, too bad. It's already policy. So we've had the situation where we just cannot reverse out of these policies that were originally based on really weak science.
Yeah, which is sad because, you know, we've seen this emerging data that shows since the dietary guidelines have gone into effect, Americans have just been getting fatter. I think there was a New York Times article that said most Americans are, I think 40% are now classified as obese. You know, what have been some of the unintended consequences of basing policy on this kind of shoddy science?
Well, we're all fat and sick. I mean, it's sort of interesting to hear nutrition experts talk about sort of the slow, steady progress of nutrition science when you say, well, look at the outcome measures. What are your outcome measures? Obesity, dramatically still rising. Type 2 diabetes, you know,
yeah, and heart
epidemic.
Disease.
Heart disease still number one or number two killer. Cancer on the rise. Fatty liver disease, a rising epidemic. Obesity amongst children. I mean, imagine if you had a baseball team that, like, lost every game for 50 years. You would say, hey, you know, maybe there's something about the underlying assumptions of what, how we're training this team that is wrong. So, you know, the experts in charge cannot really look at these outcomes and say, this is a success. And nutrition science is moving forward slowly. It's not moving forward. It's clearly, like, has no outcome that you can point to that seems successful at all.
Why is it so hard to change this? Because it seems like any alternative viewpoint is just viewed as heresy and ignored.
There's so many reasons. There's intellectual conflicts of interest of academics who've invested their entire careers in trying to show one idea is right. It's not easy to change that. There's tremendous cognitive dissonance. You have public health institutions invested in a certain set of dietary guidelines that they can't be flip-flopping on their publics. They can't admit wrong. I mean, you know, you look at the way that American Heart Association and the U.S. Dietary Guidelines sort of like tiptoed away from the low-fat diet. They don't actually recommend a low-fat diet anymore. If you go to their websites, you can't find it. And why do they tiptoe away from it? Well, that kind of reversal and embarrassment is something that institutions who are supported by the public trust, they can't afford to lose.
You actually go through and list all the clinical trials about the low-fat diet. And actually, what I thought was interesting, the U.S. government actually spent somewhere in the neighborhood of like $1 billion to test this hypothesis and found that it wasn't effective, yet I've never really seen or heard any of those studies. You know, can you talk a little bit about the suppression of information and what does that say about government being involved in food policy at all?
Yeah, well, so the government did spend, National Institutes of Health spent over $1 billion funding randomized controlled clinical trials, the most rigorous kind of science you can do, testing Ansel Keys' hypothesis, right? Because they understood this hypothesis had been adopted as policy, but maybe it wasn't supported. Maybe it was only, you know, they needed more rigorous science for it. Those trials on more than 65,000 people failed to confirm his hypothesis. They could not show that eating saturated fat and dietary cholesterol had any effect on cardiovascular mortality or total mortality. What happened to that science never became part of the scientific record, not included in scientific review papers, not spoken about, and most critically, was never used to formulate any of our nutrition policy, which is to say the experts who put together the dietary guidelines never reviewed those clinical trials, ever. When I wrote about that fact for a story for the British Medical Journal, 180 scientists, including the entire Dietary Guideline Committee from 2015, all called for the retraction of that paper. Because that's explosive.
But why? Yeah, I guess I would just ask, why are they so threatened by that? Because that seems like information that people should have had and that we need to know.
It shows that, you know, the expert community and all of our public health, our trusted public health institutions have ignored science. And they have been wrong about, you know, they basically ignored science and continued recommendations based on, you know, weak data that has made Americans fat and sick. So, I mean, who would want to own that legacy? I surely would not.
So we know that saturated fats aren't bad for your health, but what about things like LDL cholesterol that so many doctors focus on as being the culprit in heart disease?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a complex story. Saturated fats do raise your total cholesterol and your LDL cholesterol. LDL cholesterol is the bad kind mm-hmm. that your doctor focuses on. But it turns out that changing your LDL cholesterol through, while it may work with statins and drugs, the diet experiments show that changing your LDL cholesterol with diet has no effect on your cardiovascular outcomes. So it just... it's true that that is not a factor when it comes to diet. LDL cholesterol is why saturated fats are still in jail today, right? Mm-hmm. And they focus on, I should say, this is like short-term intermediate data rather than looking at the mortality, the long-term mortality data, which clearly shows, regardless of what's happening with your LDL cholesterol here, your mortality, the same rate of mortality, it's not causing increased rates of mortality. That's the outcome you want to focus on, right? But the thing about saturated fats is also they raise your good cholesterol, your HDL. They're the most efficient way to raise your good cholesterol, which turns out to be a much better predictor of your long-term cardiovascular risk. So, you know, the reason your doctor focuses on LDL, a cynic might say, is that they have drugs to prescribe for LDL. Industry tried to create drugs for your HDL, and they could never successfully do that. They could not figure out how to raise your HDL through drugs. So the cynic in me says that your doctor's prescribing is focusing on LDL because that's what they have a drug to prescribe. And saturated fats kind of get caught up in that whole model, that LDL model. But it just turns out that through diet, the diet's effect on LDL is not significant for your cardiovascular outcomes.
You know, we look at policy, but beyond that, you know, we've seen government efforts to ban trans fats. You know, the new thing now is to push these laws taxing soda. Do you think that influences health at all?
I think that government made a big mistake with the dietary guidelines. It told all Americans to eat a high grain diet. This is what most plausibly what made America fat and diabetic. That's the big mistake. These smaller efforts around the margins, you know, soda bans, soda taxes, really, they might do a little something. But the major mistake is at the foundation of our dietary guidelines, that big bottom slab of the food pyramid, that was the major mistake. And until that changes, I think these other efforts are just mainly cosmetic.
When I heard you on the Joe Rogan podcast, I think you talked about how, you know, you don't really peg yourself as a libertarian, but as you kind of started doing this work, it kind of pushed you in that direction. Can you talk about that and why?
Yeah. Well, you know, I grew up in Berkeley, California, and I come from, you know, we're all Democrats, and I've always believed, partly because I live so far from government, that is, you know, could only do good and help people in the world. And I believe there is a role for government in doing those things. But here is like the one place that I investigated deeply, a government program that seems to have been just a complete disaster for the country. And, you know, if this, I turn over this leaf and this is what I find, what would happen if you turned over another leaf and see what else you find? So, I think, you know, I've become more distrustful of government programs like this. You see in Washington, like who's in Washington, you know, lobbying government? It's all the corporations. There's no place for, you know, citizens are not there, or they're not represented as well, or they're not as organized, or they're not as well funded. So, you know, who wins out in influencing government is corporate America.
Do you see a demand side type solution to this where people are just going to try different things and experiment with their own diet, find out what works for them, independent of what government tells them what to do?
So that is what we see happening, right? You mm-hmm. see, and everybody, it's unlike, say, environmental policy, where, I mean, in diet and nutrition, everybody can do their own N equals one experiment, right? Mm-hmm. You can go on a different diet, see if it works for you. And then you have your own data, your own observations. You can't do that in other forms of policy, right? So there is, everybody has the ability to sort of find their own truth, right? But the reason that I don't think that will be a complete solution is that this top-down nature of the control that the dietary guidelines exert over America is so much more extreme than I had realized when I sort of, even just a couple years ago when I started looking into this. They control all the feeding assistance programs that come out of the USDA, school lunches, feeding programs for the elderly. They control military rations. They control, you know, what every doctor, dietitian, nutritionist, nurse on the front lines, all healthcare practitioners just kind of download the guidelines and deliver them to people. K through 12 nutrition education, they control the food supply through the, you know, what can be said called healthy on a food package. All cattle has been bred to be lean, all milk is lean, low fat products. I mean, all of that comes from the guidelines.
Since these guidelines are so important, can you talk about your work with the Nutrition Coalition and what your mission is there?
So this group, a nonprofit group that I started in Washington, D.C., it's an educational group. We accept no industry funding of any kind or any interested industry. You know, our goal is to educate people about how the dietary guidelines have not been successful, why they've not been successful, and to bring this alternative viewpoint to policymakers and public health experts. I mean, it was shocking to me when I started going to Washington, like, nobody had ever heard of any of these ideas. You know, there's the really dominant view is that the dietary guidelines are good, they're the gold standard, they're based on good science, and the reason that America is fat and sick is that America has failed to follow them.
Which we know is not true.
Right, well, that's when I started looking at the data. Is it true we failed to follow them? By every food category you can find, we have faithfully, dutifully followed the guidelines. You know, meat is down, animal fats are down, butter is down, eggs are down. We consume more fruits, more vegetables, more grains, more vegetable oils. I mean, all of that since 1980 is up in every category you can find. And also in terms of macronutrients, right? 30% increase in carbohydrates since 1965. And we've dropped our consumption of fat, and our saturated fat has gone down since the guidelines by 17 or 18%. So we've really done a good job of following the guidelines. And the story you can tell about us not following the guidelines is that they keep increasing the quotas, like eat more fruits, eat more vegetables. It's like Americans aren't going in this direction, but we just can't quite get there. But it hasn't worked so far.
So we see that the USDA is starting the process for the 2020 dietary guidelines, and they've actually opened up for public comment. Can you talk about the significance of that?
The USDA is... for the first time ever, they decided to start the process for the dietary guidelines by, instead of reviewing all the science, they said, we're going to select some fields, and I guess this is sort of wishful thinking on my part, but we're going to select some topics on which we think the science, our guidelines may not reflect the latest and best science. And incredibly, in that relatively short list is included the low-carbohydrate diet and saturated fats, which are certainly areas where the guidelines do not reflect the science. So they opened this up for public comment, and that was also a unique and I think uniquely transparent move. I think that my sense is that the USDA actually wants to see policy change, but they want to do it in a way that is transparent and good science.
So is there actually any hope for food policy change?
I think so, actually. I think there is. I think that the universe of scientists, doctors, and experts who are willing to step up now and talk about the changing understanding of the science has really shifted over the last few years. You see an increasingly vocal, more and more experts are willing to talk out about the science. And so I think that will support change. I really do.